So we want to welcome all the mentorship students from the last couple of events that have gone on, and I'll tell you about some upcoming events. The Multifamily Millions is going to be this weekend, the 4th, April 6, 7, and 8, in both Tampa and in San Jose. And then we'll have some immersions going on, San Francisco Immersion, April 6th, 7th, and 8th, and the Jacksonville Immersion is April 13th, 14th, and 15th, as well as Seattle Immersion is the same date, 13th, 14th, and 15th. Commercial training's coming up April 27, 28, 29 in Orlando, Florida. Finally, some warm air coming our way, which will be nice. And operator, want to tell people how to ask a question?
Definitely, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. Star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivia. We're going to do two high fives today. Heidi Huggins is currently making $5,000 a month renting Airbnb. How about that? And Jean-Marc Landau closed a big deal last week. However, we don't have all the details yet, but we just want to celebrate his closing of a new deal. He's got a bunch of them now. Okay. So I'll ask the first question that was emailed in. I found a property that is family owned and their financials aren't very accurate. They place CapEx money on repairs and maintenance. With my current underwriting, it shows a cap of 105, but the projected with reposition and proper financials, the cap will be a lot better. What are your takes and suggestions? And that comes from Kalu Reese from Hawaii. Well, it shows a cap of under 5. I'm not even sure that you should even contemplate taking a gamble at it. You're saying with projected repositioning and proper financials, the cap will be a lot better. Well, I'm more concerned with what your cash-on-cash return is going to be, because how are you going to get it closed without investors? And at a 5 cap, you're not paying them anything. So that's something that I would consider. I think there are a few better deals out there than something so marginal to start with. But that's just my take. Anybody want to add anything? Jermaine's here. Paul's here. Jeff's here. I'm here.
We're all here.
Okay, the next question comes from John Stevens from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. When should you get a sponsor for the deal? Should you get the sponsor before the LOI or before the contract? Well, that's like a twofold question. You should be looking at people that want to be sponsors all the time. When you find a deal, bring it to their attention. Find out if it's something they're interested in. Some sponsors want to be in it at letter of intent. Others don't care if it's at purchase and sale, but you really want to run it by anybody that you want to be the sponsor in the deal before you put it under LOI. But if you can't, I think I'd have a bank of people that could sponsor the deal after LOI.
So basically what she's saying is that you should always be looking for sponsors.
Yep. Should have them, you know, line up and find out what they like. I mean, some sponsors like repositioning properties. Others want cash flowing properties. Others want small deals. Some want large deals. So you should have them all separated into categories, so when you do get a deal, you're not fishing around or calling in frantic because you need a sponsor. You should have these people at the tip of your fingertips. What if it happens over a weekend and you can't get in touch with anybody? So you should have your list of sponsors, anybody that you met at the sponsorship event. You should have their cards handy and in a spreadsheet with some little defining characters of who they were, and the kind of deals that they want to invest in. And will they put up earnest money deposits? There's a lot of questions you want to ask the sponsors. You know, what part of the deal do they want? Are they going to take half your deal and half of your acquisition fee? Or are they going to assist you with earnest money deposits, with the money to get a syndication attorney's paperwork? Because a lot of times people don't have that kind of money. And that brings up another question. If you don't have the money and the sponsor's not willing to give you the money, where would you get it? My suggestion is taking a promissory note from somebody. Somebody that can give you $50,000 on a promissory note. You're going to pay them 10% interest for the couple of months that you have it. The only thing you've got to watch out for is that you've got to make sure you're going to close that deal, because you're going to owe them that money if you can't pay it or if you don't go through with the deal. William, do we have any questions?
Yes, we do. Our first question comes from Chip. Chip, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, all. This is Chip. I'm from sunny Southern California. I've been talking with an investor in Oklahoma who owns several buildings, and he has them under a C corporation. He wants to transfer to an S corporation, and he says it's going to take like 5 years because of taxes. And he asked if we would be willing to enter into a lease, a five-year lease, and at the end of the 5 years, then, of course, we would purchase the property. So I just wanted to ask what you thought of that proposition. I know I should probably contact a tax attorney, but I wanted to get your feel of it as well.
I don't really see a problem with it. The only thing I would worry about is that he changed his mind halfway through. You'd have to have an ironclad agreement with him, sealed by an attorney, that, you know, you're leasing this property to help him, and that in 5 years you will own it by yourself without his assistance.
Okay. Jeannie, is it possible to command from the outstart that, for instance, we're entitled to the depreciation and any other tax benefits that ownership would have?
Yeah, you can draft that up, but you better get an attorney to really put his thinking cap on of all the things that could come up. I mean, are you going to be saddled with his employees? What if you don't like them? What if you don't want them there? You really, because you're leasing it, do you get all the baggage that comes with it?
Well, at least his intention, as he expresses it, is that it's only to benefit him in changing his ownership, from a C corp to an S corp. But otherwise, he would be hands off, and it would be all us, and we would have the employees. We would do everything as if we were owners on paper.
And what kind of a lease is he going to give you? I mean, what do you have?
Well,
is this like a master lease?
I don't know, and that's. I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, Chip. Is this like a master lease?
Yes, I guess so, Jermaine. That's my intention.
That could work. I have a master lease I can email to you, and then you could read it over and see if that's something that you'd be interested in going forward on.
And Chip, real quick, so you guys would collect the rents and all that, and he wouldn't get any of that, would he, or – would he still entitled to? Okay, because usually in master leases,
the idea is that he's entitled to none of the benefits. He simply has to retain ownership for 5 years so that he doesn't get taxed heavily as he shifts his properties into an S corporation. At least that's what he tells me. I asked him if he had. I said, "What about an LLC?" And he said, "Yeah, I realize now I should have done that when I bought them, but I had bad legal advice then." So. Obviously, there's a lot to be fleshed out, and we haven't even really arrived on a sale price yet. But I just thought I'd give you folks a call and take this opportunity to see if this is even possible.
Okay.
Yeah, it is possible, but I'm even thinking that he may be thinking 5 years because he's got a prepayment penalty that he doesn't want to pay.
Mm.
That's just something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
It's probably
okay. Well, Jeannie, I will take you up on your offer to receive something by email.
Yeah, I'm
going to
send it to you. Could you give me your email address?
Yes, it's my name, Chip, C-H-I-P as in Peter, Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, at att.net.
Okay, I will send that over to you.
Thank
right,
you so
Chip,
much, Jeannie. Jermaine, thank you.
Today?
And no, thank you. That's it for now. And a shout out to all of you and Jeff also there. So I love you guys, and we're still hacking it out here in Los Angeles, and we'll find something soon.
Good. Hopefully. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
Hey, Jean.
Yeah?
Jeannie, the only thing that I would probably say, my concern would be, and I know Chip is probably still listening, is that once you do something like that, what happens? Who transfers the insurance? Does it go in his name, or does it stay in the owner's name? And what if something was to happen, not saying that it would, and then the insurance company gives him a big check? Does he give it to them now, or does he keep it? Does he pocket it? Those are things that you have to work out in that master lease option. So.
Yeah, and you also have to have the buttons of an attorney that can read through all that red tape.
Yep.
Okie-doke. Operator, any other questions?
Yes, our next question comes from Marsha. Marsha, please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Wow.
Okay, good. Hi, Jeannie and Jermaine. I'm in California also, and I'm calling about a project that we are kind of in the middle of acquiring, you might say, 100 units in Decatur, Alabama. And we're working with Craig, so we have some opinions from Craig, and I would just love to hear your opinion too. I actually sent you some things this morning, but it was probably too late for you to look at it before we started this call. So,
who did you send it to?
I sent it to Jermaine.
Okay, because I didn't see anything.
Yeah, it just came in 45 minutes before the start here this morning, and I know you wanted 90 minutes, but anyway. So let me just tell you, this is, well, first of all, could you tell me this bit of information before I tell you this long story? Do you have any idea what it costs to do a water bill back system? That is, this particular project, the owner pays all the water, and the water is $40,000 a year on 100 units. And would you have any idea what it would cost to put in a water billback system?
Okay, so here's what we did on our property, and I recommend it to you as well.
Uh-huh.
So when you go to get your water, you want to get a bond. It costs $250 because sometimes the water department will charge you $20,000 up front. But if you can get a bond, it's like $250. And then you want to call the water department and find out what an average bill for each size unit is. So if you have a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom, you want to find out what the water bill is for each of the units of that size. And they will give you a figure. In our case, it was 25, 30, and 35. The water department let us know that you cannot make money on water or utilities, so you have to reduce it down by a dollar or two to make sure that you're never billing them for more than what their water bill would be. So what you want to do is instead of instituting a billback system, which is an outside vendor who mails a postcard to your residence, and they'll come up with every single excuse going, I didn't get my bill, and you see them all over the lawn. They just throw them out. So when they come to pay their rent, they pay their water first, and then their rent gets applied. And it goes right.
Wait, with the third party system, you're saying that's how
No, this is eliminating that third party system. You're going to have a management company do it right out of the gate.
Okay, so we just add that amount, whatever that amount ends up being, so that in that case you said $25, let's say, for the one bedroom, and we're going to charge $24, so we're just adding that to their rent amount, correct?
Yeah, so what you're going to do is send notification around to your tenants that effective the first of the following month, they will start paying for their water. Their water will be applied first before their rent is applied. So if they only come in with their rent figure, you're going to take a certain amount for their water and the rest will go towards their rent, and they will be late on their rent if they're $24 shy.
Oh, okay.
So their free ride has ended, basically.
Okay, so then the owner is still going to pay this big amount, but it
they're still
going to
pay it.
Yeah.
But you're collecting it from, put it in your underwriting as, utility reimbursement.
Okay,
got it. So you're not going to get a ride anymore.
So it's not going to cost me money that I have to add to my underwriting template. It's not costing me money.
If you hired somebody, like a third party to send out these postcards, that would go into your underwriting. But in this case, you're controlling it yourself.
Okay, got it. Okay, well, good, that's nice to hear. All right, so let me tell you about these units. 100 units, they are big units, and they're very well located. That is, they're very visible on the street, and they look fine. From the outside, there's 44 one-bedroom, 44 two-bedroom, and 12 three-bedroom. The project came out of foreclosure. It was the owner has owned this for like 25 years, and then he sold it in 15. And then the people that bought it ended up, long or short story, did not, went into foreclosure. So the owner got it back last October of 17. But in this state, they have foreclosed owners have the right of redemption for one whole year. So that is a factor that anybody could, as long as they came in with the full amount, which is $3.7 million, in cash, they could redeem this property even after we bought it for quite a bit more money than that, right? So there's a risk of that. Then right now, since the owner took it back, it was at 40% occupancy in October, and he's gotten it up to 95%. He's a self-managed, you could say. And so it's obviously not stable, and nobody could get a loan on it. So he's offering owner financing at 6% interest only for 2 years. And if we needed a third year, 7% for a third year. So since the occupancy was 40% then, he has filled the units. He does no credit checks, figuring that it's easy to evict in Alabama. And what he says is that these people pay their rent, but they might not make their car payment, they might not pay their medical bills, but they do pay their rent. So these are low-income people. In fact, 20% of them, about 20 of the 100, are filled with Section 8 people, some who have been there for like 30 years. So let's see. So one of my questions is, do you think having with the idea, but being that we're going to raise the rent here, otherwise, well, I guess, well, based upon the current rent, see, the water utilities were $40,000, but you could get those down anyway. I'd have to redo the underwriting template. But anyway, based on them at $40,000, the expenses are still only 40% of the current rent. And I know you guys taught us it should be 50 or even, or that most
places in Alabama, 47, 48 is about customary.
Okay. Yeah, and I have used in my underwriting template 3% or 4% for management. Actually, this one has 4%. And I've allowed 80,000 for payroll. That is for two people, one on-site manager and one, maintenance, full-time maintenance guy. So I don't know if that's too much or not enough for 100 units. So anyway,
I probably would have been 90,000 myself.
Oh,
I would
really?
Have put in at 900 a door for two people.
Okay, for two people. Yeah, because you have to pay all the insurance and all this other stuff for these people, right? Just like their employees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So benefits and all this stuff. Okay, 90K. Yeah. So. Let's see, even with 20% down, which is 900,000, and the seller financing at 6%, and I estimated the closing cost at 1%, I don't know if that would really be accurate, but because it's owner financing, it's a little different than a normal case. And with a 3% ACK fee, the total raise is a little over 1 million, 1,000,080. So based upon that, the cash on cash is 9.4, so that's lower than 12. You guys say 12. The debt coverage ratio, which is not applicable in this time, but at some point we would get a loan, like as soon as it's stabilized, I guess. Anyway, that's 1.47, and the cap rate's 4.9. And if we as the owners, I guess you'd call it, did 20% equity, it would give the investors a 7.5% return. Obviously, all these numbers can be dinked around all kinds of different ways, but sort of that's kind of the story. And I wonder if that's enough information for you to give any determination on whether we should go forward. Because now we're already got the lawyers going. We got more due diligence costs.
I would jump on it. I'd stop you right here. I would jump right on it.
You would?
I would jump on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's 95% occupied. 95% occupied. You got residents that are there 30 years. Did you check out any crime in the area? See if there's any crime going on that property?
Well, there was a shooting there at 2 weeks ago. I don't think anybody was killed. It was in the newspaper. Our local lawyer there told us about it. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have known, being I'm in California. But anyway, there was a shooting there, and I do know the owner has bulletproof glass in the office. So that's the kind of place this is. These people are Section 8, and then they're very low income. So, like, they work at a chicken factory. A chicken processing factory. They make like 10 or 12 bucks an hour kind of thing. And with part-time jobs, you know how they don't give people full-time jobs anymore because it costs, employers have to pay so much for health care and all that. So they keep them at like 28 hours or 30 hours a week. You know, they do that pretty much across the country, right? You've heard of that? Yeah. So these people, I don't really know what they make. I haven't seen. But, I don't know. What is 12 bucks an hour, 30 hours a week? That's like
500 bucks a week.
Could be
close. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, these are very low-income people. But these are pretty nice units. I have not inspected them, obviously. They're big, like I said. And so all these scary factors, and you still think we should jump on it, huh? Because Greg is encouraged.
Well, he's been on the financing for 2 years.
Yeah.
And, myself, I'd probably jump on it. $3.7 million? The only thing that concerns me is the previous owner, the people that let it go back.
Right. Did you say 2.7 million? Is that what you said?
You said 3.7.
Oh, yes, 3.7 for the foreclosure. But we're paying more than that. We're paying 4.5. You know, that's the sale price, let's say. But somebody else
could come in. It's still only 45 a unit.
Yeah, it's 45 a door. We have a friend, just so happens, who is a Lindahl person, who bought in the same area, like a half a mile away from this. And she paid $33 a door. She just closed in, you know her. She just closed
I know who it is.
Yeah, the end of December, but she did tie this up. Yeah, way back last summer, she tied it up before Mazda and, who is it, Toyota are coming into Huntsville to, you know, build a new factory that got a lot of, the president, Trump, talked about that on his State of the Union address. Anyway, she got 33 a door, and now we're at 45 a door. And, but you think 45 a door?
Inflation has happened. Everybody's going up in price because eventually Huntsville is going to be the size of Atlanta. It's going to be huge. It's just growing and growing, and there's more and more industry moving there.
Okay. And you think even though we have all these, oh, gosh, what do I call them, low-paid workers.
I put a neighborhood watch in, first of all. That's what I would do with that property is I'd put the neighbors inside watching out for the property, which is going to alleviate some crime and make the families feel safer. And I also would probably call the local police department and find out if somebody wants to rent there and give them a discounted rent. Because if they see a police cruiser on the premises, they're going to have less crime. And less things. And make it an incentive for people to want to live there and have a nice, safe place to live. So you could incentivize your residents by saying if anybody sees something. And also, I would put cameras on the property so that you can see it on your phone and watch it yourself.
Oh, okay. And you think that we can find somebody? Obviously, I'm not managing, right? Of course, we have a professional manager. You think somebody, some professional managers will take on something like this where there was a shooting last week and, you know, they don't mind
Did anybody
like
get killed? Did anybody
not
get
that
killed?
Not that I know of.
That's something you have to investigate.
Okay.
But, you know, Jennifer will go by there for you. She's that kind of gal, and also her partner is an attorney, and he can go by there too.
Wait, who did you say could go by there?
Jennifer Hill. Isn't that who you're talking about? The bar?
No.
All right, who is
I don't recognize name you're saying.
Okay. Well, Jennifer Hill, she owns like 4 or 5 in Huntsville now.
Okay, could you tell me her name again? I can kind of hardly understand, if you don't mind. What?
Jennifer Hale. H-A-L-E.
Okay, Jennifer Hale. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay,
I'll
sorry.
I'll give you a number. 323-864-5000.
323-864-5000. Okay, no, it's some...
It's right in California there.
Oh, okay. Okay. And she owns in Decatur.
She owns all over around that Huntsville area. So I do know somebody that called me about Decatur. I can't remember who it is. Was another girl, but can't remember.
Well, there is another Lindahl person, this one. I don't want to use her name in case she's whatever. Actually, I'll tell you, her first name is Nancy. How about that? But
do you know who she's talking about?
I have no idea. I'm sorry.
No. Okay. Well,
Marcia, can you email the name to me? Because I actually want to call her to find out some information in regards to the property.
Okay.
All right. Just email it to me.
Okay.
Email her name. All right.
Yeah, I will. Okay. All right. Well, That's awesome. I thought you were going to tell us, we keep thinking we should be running from this instead of that this is too scary for us beginners.
Okay, now, you think? Jeffrey, what's your take?
Kind of risky with that person being able to come back into the deal for the foreclosure.
Yeah, that would concern me too about the old owners being able to come back in after you put all the blood, sweat, and tears in there, and they can take it over in the next year.
So
that
we've talked to the owner about that, and he's given us a quote indemnity that if they come back. That he will pay us back our, our down payment and that. But, the indemnity is not like backed by $1 million or anything. It's just backed by kind of like his credit, you might say. And we could conceivably be out the closing costs and any kind of, any other costs, the due diligence costs, we still have a lot of that to do. It could be like, I don't know what, but, the closing cost at 1% is $45,000 right there. And then our due diligence costs, we have to have, an appraisal and, we have to do this inspection and I got to make a couple more trips back there. And so that's probably going to be like, I don't know what, $70,000 or something like that in closing costs and due diligence, right? That we could conceivably be out if the people came, So anyway, I was thinking about that maybe this indemnity, maybe I would ask the seller to promise to pay us back not only our down payment, but our out-of-pocket expenses if that should happen. I don't know. What do you think of that?
How do you know that the people in that market are going to pay water? Is up with it? Did you do any market surveys to see what that's what the competition's doing?
Yeah. I don't know about that part. I haven't checked that out yet. The back to the water thing you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
You broke up.
Your tenant profile is a bunch of Section 8 and. I don't know if they'll be able to pay the increase in water. If the competition isn't charging for water, then they'll move over there. But it seems like you want to raise rents in that area, almost like you want to change the tenant profile, but you have a mix of Section 8 in this. I'm not sure what the game plan is on the tenants. Are you going to place them all?
That bottom line is one of the things we're most concerned about. We got these tenants that have no credit check and a lot of Section 8, and that means a lot of people hanging around doing nothing, watching TV all day. And if we try to raise the tenant mix, maybe some hardworking people don't want to be around all these kind of like welfare people. Like maybe they would limit raising the tenant profile. What do you think about that?
I think you should call Section 8 up to see if they what part will they pay part of that utility bill too? Because where are these people going to come up with the money for the water? And plus, how to change the tenant profile when you have existing Section 8 in there? So you might just either go all Section 8 with better Section 8 tenants, or it's kind of like the increase in getting the build back system going, how's that affecting your offer price? Is that one of the big value plays that you're relying on the property?
Well, that helps. on my underwriting template, I took the actual cost, which is 40, and I took it down to 5,000 on my side, the hours. I'm using your form, the hours side, down to 5,000. And even with it for a year, and that would be just water for the lawn. And you only have to water like half the year there because it rains all the time. And so that's still, I'm at right now with 4% management. I haven't done the due diligence, so I don't know all these exact costs. But anyway, I'm at less than 40% expenses, which means that something's wrong. You know, they need to be higher, right?
Yeah.
That's what you guys tell us. So once they get higher.
Any of the utilities? Are they paying any of the utilities, like electric or gas?
Yeah, they're paying all their other utilities. They have to call and get them hooked up themselves. The electricity, there's no gas, so electricity and what else? That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, so
electricity
you should be
and
close to 50 on that, yeah.
Well, okay. I'm going to, you know, rethink about it. I like your, you know, we are getting scared by this. Well, our next issue, of course, is that we need some money to do this because we don't have enough money to play this whole game. So it's got to look good to some investors. Do you have any clue where we could get some investors?
That's something you got to market for every day of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's what I have to do next, find some investors.
Yep.
Yeah. And I haven't taken your investor class. What was it? Finding private money, because I think I'm not taking it till the next one, which is October. So, okay, but I got to find this now.
That's a long time away. But you have the home study course. You should be listening to those audios.
Okay. All right. I will look on that. I know.
And develop an elevator pitch for yourself.
Okay. Okay.
All righty.
All right.
Good talking to you.
All right. Thank you so much for everything, Jeannie and Jermaine. Much appreciated.
Okay.
You're welcome. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Peggy. Peggy, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie and Jermaine and everybody. Peggy from Chicago, can you hear me?
Yep.
We can.
Thank you. Got a few questions. This might sound, I want to piggyback on I forgot her name, the previous caller. To ask where can I find a suggested template for elevator pitch? Because this just came up and I thought, you know, I would ask.
It's in the apartment home study course. It's in your boot camp manual. Everybody talks about an elevator pitch, and it's only like a 30-second screen about yourself. It's, I buy properties in emerging markets throughout the country with strong value adds. It's very simple. It's just what you're doing.
Yeah, go up to the iMentorship website. Go up to the iMentorship website and look on it. Just like I have to see this called private money. Go up there. Well, it's called something like getting the money, getting all the money you need. Go there, right? There's like a there's a couple audios, and there's also like there's a couple like scripts where we scripted it out, and Dave explains what you're trying to tell the investor. So it's scripted out good too. So there's some really good resources up there. You go to. And if you can't find them, just email.
I guess okay. I will do that because I can't remember because I've gone through the whole audio, and I can't remember seeing a script there, so I will definitely email you that. The second question would be, what would be the proper procedure for us, you know, while we're sourcing funding and before we put in LOI, should we already have an LLC there and have people, you know, for example, friends and family that would like to be part of the investors put in their money there already? Like, what would be a suggested or proper procedure?
Well, no, you don't want anybody putting in any money until you have a property that you have put in a letter of intent. You can put it in your name and then and or assigns. The assigns part is the LLC of the property. So these people cannot put any money into anything until you have an EIN number You have your syndication documents. You can talk to people about it, but you can't accept any money until they have these signature pages of a subscription agreement and an operating agreement and a questionnaire. You have to have those, or else you could get into trouble with an SEC. Could be giving these people your credited investor form so you know what their intention is. And when you find property, that's when you reach out to them and say, you know, we finally found a property that meets our criteria. Would you consider investing in this, this, and talk to them about how you're going to run the property, but don't give them any returns until you get a physical property package with all your agreements and your EIN number, because you don't want to get into trouble.
Okay. Thank you. Then what would be a good timing for us to form the LLC? Was it before we sent, or after we had this LOI signed and all these documents?
When you go to P&S, you're going to be putting 1% of the purchase price into it. And then you're going to... at the same time as you and maybe your property management company are going to go in there and do the due diligence, you're going to know day one whether you're going to move forward with this property or not. Then you're going to create an LLC of that property. And that's when you can get your syndication documents created.
Okay. Broke up a little bit, let me repeat, see if I heard him right. So I put in 1%, well, the money worth 1% of the purchase price in order to get started with the due diligence and everything else. And if after underwriting,
you're not going to put that money with the seller or the seller's broker. You're going to put it with a title company.
Okay. And then, so what is that called? Like, do I go to the title company and instead I want to start investigating this property and, you know, here's money and... what do I do with it?
You're going to send them a copy of the purchase and sale where they're notified that they get 1% of the purchase price as a holding as you go through your due diligence. Mm-hmm. So they're holding it for you, because mm-hmm. if you decide to back out of the property and you have it with a title company, you get the money right back. If you have it with the owner or the owner's broker, it could be 30, 60, mm-hmm. 90 days before they send it back to you.
I see. Got it. Okay. So then we'll go to the title company. Is this call going to be recorded that we can replay?
Yep.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Thank you. And then, so after we go to the title company, we do this. Mm-hmm.
It takes a day or so before the recording. Jeff, for some reason, you're talking, but it's holding back your words until you're into the second sentence for some reason.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know why. I wonder if mine's doing the same. Is it, Jermaine?
Yeah, you have to wait like a half a second when someone calls. So that way they can, you can get in, because if not, if you talk over each other, it's there's some type of delay, so.
Oh. So
okay.
What he's saying is the call is going to be recorded, but it will take a day to post up to the website.
Okay.
It'll
so
be on there by 12
to
o'clock
the,
tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. But we won't get a notification. We'll just go to the website to look for it, right?
Right.
Okay. So let's just have a company first. 1% of purchase price. Okay, and then after the due diligence, we decide to move forward. That's after the LOI is signed, right?
Yes.
Or not?
Before you go to purchase and sale.
Okay.
10 days before you go to purchase and sale.
Okay, 10 days before. Okay, all right. This is very beginner. And I also want to ask about, because you just mentioned the immersion. I didn't hear about Chicago. I did know that there's one coming at the end of April. I just want to make sure that it's still going on.
There is one in Chicago on April 27, 28, and 29. And the same weekend is mm-hmm. also in Tampa, the 27th, 28th, and 29th.
Okay, I see. All right, I will check with that because I didn't receive any information. I think I registered for that. So, and I didn't hear you say it. I want to make sure that it's still going on. Okay, thank you. I will check more with the coach because this is very beginner question. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Meredith. Meredith, please go ahead.
Meredith, before you start, Jeff talked about that private money or finding the money is actually competency number 12. And Peggy, if you look on there, you'll be able to find the audio that Dave did about elevator pitches. So. It's competency 12 on the mentorship website. Sorry, Meredith. Go ahead.
No worries. Hi, Jermaine. Hi, Jeannie. This is Meredith out in Sacramento, California. I have a lead on a potential deal that was brought to me by someone who knows an owner that's motivated to sell a package of 27 units that's split across three properties in the same neighborhood. I don't have any financials on the property yet, so I'm not sure if it's a deal, but there's potential to get it for $35,000 a door, so it's pretty interesting. But I have two questions.
California?
No, not California.
Oh, it's in Tennessee. What part of Tennessee?
In Chattanooga.
Oh, that's a good market.
Yeah, I'm looking over there. So I guess I just have two questions. So in terms of the process, would I ask this guy to put me in touch directly with the owner? And then I'm also curious if you have any recommendations for the type of compensation structure for him, like if it would make sense to give him a finder's fee and if that would be calculated as what percentage of the purchase price. I just want to keep this in mind in the back of my head when I'm talking to the guy who knows the owner.
So the guy that knows the owner is not a broker?
I know he's a realtor. I don't know if he does a lot of commercial work.
Well,
I'm talking to him later today so I can find out. If he's a broker, would he represent the seller, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the most straightforward option. And if he's
not, he might be a buyer's broker and wanting you to sign the buyer's broker agreement, which entitles him to get a commission because he brought you the property.
Okay. So I don't want to do that if he's a buyer's broker.
Well, I'm not saying, don't do it. But if the seller's broker doesn't want or the listing broker doesn't want to share the commission with him and there's enough room, you could put it in closing costs other and still be able to pay him.
Got it. Okay.
So don't rule it out if it's a good deal and it's a deal that you like and want. I wouldn't rule it out 100%.
Got it. Okay, perfect. That makes sense. Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm talking to him later today, so this is helpful for me just to kind of have that when I'm getting more information about the deal.
Good.
So that's it for today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Paul. Paul, please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. This is Paul calling. And I'm calling about a deal that is coming back to the market because the first buyer walked. And apparently the first buyer on inspection found out that the roofs were virtually shot, so that's 150 grand. The boilers are very old. I'm assuming your advice would be to take that back as a repair credit versus lowering the price, or do you have any thoughts on that?
I would probably do both, or I would call and find out what a bridge loan is going to cost to get it all repaired, lower the cost as well. Or you might want to find out if it's an assumption loan, too. If you can assume their loan, the bank's going to make them do some of the repairs without you having to. The bank will make them.
Oh, okay. So so do I hear you saying that I should ask to see if they'd be willing to do seller financing? Is that what you're saying just to be able to assume their loan?
Yeah, find out if it's an assumption loan and how many years are left on it. That's number one. Number two, I would first contact the bridge loan company and find out what their rates are. And then the third thing is definitely you're going to ask for a repair credit. I mean, they're not going to be able to sell the property to anybody because...
Yeah.
They've already gone through one inspection and found out the roofs are bad and the boilers are bad. Those are pretty astronomical numbers there.
Yeah, okay. I think that's it. I just had a couple simple questions.
Okay, those are simple questions for big money.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Welcome.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, well, we're almost at the top of the hour. I do have a couple that were emailed in, which I will, I'm going to read the shorter ones because, I don't have any short ones. Okay, this is somebody else from Hawaii, Les and Rachel Passion, or Patient. I'm not sure, P-A-S-I-O-N. Excuse me if I didn't get your name right. Hope all is well in Rockland, Mass. My wife Rachel and I attended the boot camp in San Francisco 2 weeks ago. We flew in from Hawaii and could not pass up the opportunity. We learned so much about multifamily investing and continue to educate ourselves with the help of our mentor, Randy Hines. I have two questions to ask. At this point in time, is it possible to find pocket listings in Hawaii? And if yes, when was the last time someone closed a deal? A, I'm not sure about a pocket listing. And B, I'm not sure the last time someone closed a deal. I know that people are closing deals all the time, but I'm not sure in Hawaii because we just take their name, picture of the property. We don't oftentimes want to know where, but sometimes they tell us. And is it possible to find the Trinity in the Hawaiian Islands? Well, if you find a motivated seller, you can find a Trinity. But you need a motivated seller, you could do a short mailing to out-of-state owners. I like the website Crexi, CREXI.com. They have a lot of properties. You go in there, you put in multifamily. There's a drop-down menu. Put apartments or multifamily, and then put the area of Hawaii that you want and see if there's any properties up there. Anything you want to add, Jermaine? I feel like I wasn't really giving this my attention because I really don't know any of the answers.
Yeah, I'm like you, Jamie. I'm not sure about Hawaii because that's not really something that's on a lot of people's radar as far as, you know, students that we talk to who may be interested in Hawaii. My recommendation, like Jeannie said, go to Crexie, go to LoopNet. you know, look online to see if there's anybody. Even talk to Randy. He travels back and forth from where he is to Hawaii. See if he So see if he has, if he's heard anything about some things that are going on in Hawaii. He'll be the best person to talk to in regards to that.
And what I might do
What I would do is to play in Hawaii is be with the government has all these like low income housing areas. I would go out there, I'd do drive bys and like try to pick up some properties. That's where you're gonna hit eternity. A lot of the properties that are close to the beach and stuff, they're just equity plays. People are buying them, they're not buying them on cash flow. So if you go out, go inland, you know, on the island, that's where you're going to find your opportunities.
All right, thank you.
The other thing is, I think you should look at the smaller properties, like under five. I think you'd probably find a deal out there, buy a 4-unit right near the beach. It might cost you a little bit, but boy, you could rent those out for a good sum of money. You know, keep under like the normal radar. You might find some properties listings that way.
So, Jeannie, I heard we got one more call from somebody, a new person. So let's take that one last one, okay?
Go right ahead.
Okay, up next we have Nanji. Nanji, please go ahead.
Hello, this is Nanji from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi,
Nanji. How you doing?
How are you? I'm good.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'd like to thank you for the course that the office has been working very hard to send it to us. It's been very helpful, but I have a hard time getting downloading here. How do I get a copy of this, the courses?
How do you get a copy of the course and download it? What are you talking about? The special training certificate?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, Jermaine can help you with that.
So I need
Jermaine
to
can
call
download
him,
them and give you a screenshot, right, Jermaine?
Can you call me and then when I can talk off air, so that would probably be a lot easier to do it that way.
I do that, Jermaine. I'll call you. I will email you with that.
Okay.
My other
That's
question
perfect.
Is that, yeah, I'm looking at over 150 units here in Kansas City, and probably where Ryan and LRI maybe an offer. Just want to see if anyone interested in investing in this area. It's 150 units here is in the Gorong area. So it's probably C in the B, B, C minor, RC plus, and B area. So just want to say if anyone interested in investing in this area, you can contact me. Can I give my number out here, Janine?
Sure.
Again, my name is Nanji Wang, and my telephone number is 559-303-3464. Again, 559-303-3464. If anyone interested about the property, please give me a call and we'll talk more about it. Thank you.
Okay, good going, Nanji.
Thank you. Well, everyone in the office, I appreciate it very much for everything that you do for us.
Good. Have a good day. All right, operator, is that the last call?
That was the last caller, Jeannie.
Okay, so c'est la vie for this week. Next week, I believe it's Dave again, isn't it?
It is Dave.
So, you know, you guys are giving Dave more questions than you're giving me these days. How about that? Anyways, you guys take care. Have a great week. We're hoping for some sunshine here. We got rain coming our way, snow yesterday. We're fighting our way into the springtime here. Daylight saving time is back out already. Anyways, take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Have a good weekend.